Hello, this is another episode of The Couch. Welcome. Come in, sit down. This is ABC Radio National's weekly check-in with TV and streaming series. If you're new to it, I'm Jason DeRosso. And with me is Radio National's TV czar, the woman who sees everything. I don't know how she finds the time to sleep. It's Wenli Ma. How are you doing this week?
Hello. I'm rested.
Good. Good. There's been a lot. There's been a lot on. And there's a couple of, I think, really interesting shows that are very different this week that we're going to have a look at that I think take an interesting, well, have an interesting approach to gender. Well, gender is front and center in both of them. Mm. Let's start with the Netflix Australia adaptation of My Brilliant Career, an adaptation, of course, of the Miles Franklin novel of the same name, the novel that inspired Gillian Armstrong's landmark 1979 debut film starring Judy Davis and the late Sam Neill, shot them to international fame. Mm. For those who don't know, the story of a young woman from a poor background at the turn of last century who wants to write, but she has to navigate the pressures to fall in love and settle that come mainly from, well, her grandmother, but also
society
more
just
generally.
Survival.
The survival back then. Survival. Times were different. Yeah. So we've got Sibylla, the protagonist played by an excellent Philippa Northeast, I think. What do you
think? She's amazing in it. She's like radiant and she crackles and it feels like she almost didn't exist before this role, even though she has done a lot of other work. But now I feel like she could be rightly defined by this because it's just so punchy.
She does crackle in it in the best possible way. You may have seen her from Home and Away, The Newsreader. She's done a whole heap of other shows, including the other Netflix show, Territory. Sam Neill's character, Harry Beecham, the love interest in the show. Well, really, there's a couple. There's a kind of love triangle going on.
Yeah, it's a love triangle. And you're supposed to think it's a love triangle. Like, who is she going to choose? Is she going to choose Harry Beecham, the handsome man that is a little out of her league, so everyone says? Or is she going to choose Frank, the other guy who's there and who seems like a very affable, you know, certainly a friend? But that's bait and switch, isn't it?
It is indeed. And he there is a lot of chemistry there between her and this sort of red herring character. I mean, we're not giving anything away. The book's been out for, you know, more than 100 years.
125-year-old spoiler alert.
But the Harry Beecham character, we have to point out, is played by the wonderful Christopher Chung, who you will know as the kind of IT nerd sleuth in Slow Horses. Let's hear some of the trailer to get us in the mood.
I'm sure you'll make someone a lovely wife.
That's Granny's plan. It's not mine.
I spend the
Just hope there's a proposal coming. Is that all there is for me?
Where were you two?
She was perfectly safe with you.
You're thinking about him, aren't you? How do you know if love is real? You sacrifice everything for it. Had a man's name on it, they would never question my expertise.
What is that hiding away behind those eyes?
It's mostly concealed fury.
Now, I guess we have to talk about how much this has been updated and tweaked and massaged into something that Netflix want to put out in 2026.
Yes, I think it does have a very modern sensibility, but you could argue that so did Miles Franklin's book, so did Gillian Armstrong's film. There is this through line for over a century of this story being kind of out of time, and now it feels maybe more of its time.
Yes. Now, what are you referring to then there in terms of its time?
I mean, I guess the politics of it for sure. And now I guess the visuals of it, the sort of tone and vibe of it, it does feel very kind of created for a 2026 audience. There are moments that feel like they were created to go viral on social media. And I think, you know, I'm thinking of an oyster scene. I'm thinking of a bathtub scene. I think those moments will definitely have its champions.
The bathtub scene's a little risque.
Risque, but it's also, you know, quite empowering. And I think it just sort of reminds people that desire has always existed. It's not that we just talk about it more now than they did 125 years ago.
The production design on it is really great.
Yeah, it's really beautiful.
They've used a lot of real locations for exteriors within about an hour radius of Adelaide, I think. So
yeah.
These houses, this row of houses, a series of houses, sorry, look wonderful. These stately mansions.
They're so gorgeous. Full disclosure, I went on a set visit paid for by Netflix last year, and I went to one of the houses that stand in for 5 Bob Downs, which is Parry Beecham's house. And so I walked through that manor and into this gorgeous atrium they have that is for Kate Mulvaney's character, Aunt Gussie. And it
who's
is
the bohemian kind
very
of
bohemian, very
character.
Forward, very kind of, you know, fresh and modern thinker, and it was just draped in these luscious fabrics, and there are like peacock feathers around, and it felt incredibly like almost like a womb, like it was just encompassing you. And I think that pops on the screen as well.
It does. I think the production design pops on the screen. There are a few obviously sets on sound stages where they've recreated the interiors of other mansions. Kate Mulvaney's character is an interesting person to get into perhaps the politics of it, because she is very bohemian, but she has a few blind spots, doesn't she? And they're kind of, she's a white privileged woman of her time. Now, this is a show where Christopher Chung, playing Sam Neill's character in the movie, is now half Chinese. So he has a background there, and there is a dimension of racism, Australian racism, in this show that is sometimes given a nod to, but nowhere more specifically than in the subplots involving the First Nations characters. Cheryl Lee Watson in particular is this horse trainer, Nell. And here, what did you think of those additions?
I don't mind them at all. I mean, they're not canonical characters, Nell and some of the other First Nations characters, because, I mean, they did exist, like their contemporary counterparts at that time existed. They're not plucked from nowhere.
But have they been given the same three dimensions as the central characters, the canonical characters of this show, or of the original IP of the book?
I mean, they're not main characters. They're definitely only supporting characters, and they are sort of designed to flesh out the world a bit more. But I do like that Nell has her own through line and her own story arc. She ends up somewhere at the end of the series and where she started. And Philip and Northeast character, Sybilla, does immediately sort of think of Nell when she wants to write about a woman, you know, who is different, who is a little more gung-ho.
Nell becomes inspiration.
Yeah,
yes,
and so I think that's a nice moment.
Well, it's fine, but you kind of know where it's all going, don't you? I mean, I don't know that the new series does fold in these moments as well as it could do and fold in these characters. There's a gay plot subplot.
Yes.
Which is nice enough, but again, it feels a little, to me, like it's a little two-dimensional in terms of where it goes. Maybe there's not enough time.
It's only six episodes.
Six episodes.
And it is a large ensemble.
And the thing that strikes you about the film, I think, is that I don't know that this story is necessarily good for episodic television, because I don't know that there's a lot of opportunities for cliffhangers. And there's a couple of, wow, there's at least one really dead episode for me. But I think as a film, you're stuck with it for the 2 hours.
The film is much more focused. I think the film takes a particular strand out of the novel.
But the ebb and flow of the novel story, I think, is there for you to kind of enjoy, and you don't have time to sort of walk away from it. And I'm not sure every episode's a winner here. And I do think that it bites off more than it can chew.
It could be a case that they're setting up for a potential season 2, because they haven't ruled it out. There are more stories to tell from Miles Franklin's own life.
But okay, what about Christopher Chung, great actor, and Philippa Northeast, great in this role? Do they have chemistry?
Not as much as Judy Davis and Sam Neill did.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah. I mean, they're fine together, but I think she is so ebullient and she just pops so much that I feel like he doesn't have quite the chops to meet her where she is.
Look, I think full marks to it for trying to, I think, position it within a 2026 sensibility and trying to work its way around, you know, some of these white characters and their privilege and so forth, and trying to, I guess, zoom out to look at the structural issues with Australian society, you could argue, still today.
Yeah.
I don't think it quite hits the mark.
Look, I mean, I enjoyed it, and some of those things, there are more nuances there too, because even with Christopher Chung's character, you know, Aunt Gussie says that because your father married a Chinese woman, now you can't veer off and do something different that you want to do. You now need to sort of really follow conventions because one generation got to have their fun, so now you've got to do the straight and narrow. So I think it did a good job, and I also think there are some just great performances, great production, and you know what? It was enjoyable. I had a really good time watching it.
Yeah, me less so, but I wouldn't mind a season two that actually looks at Christopher Chung. There's so much there that's unpacked.
I feel like his story might be done.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Anyway, okay, My Brilliant Career. Have a look at it. It's over at Netflix, 6-part series. Now, we're going to look, in the time we have left, at the new series of season of Ted Lasso. Well, he's back.
Season four. Ted is back. He wasn't meant to come back.
No.
He was meant to be a 3-season arc, you know, done. That was how they wrote it. And there was just so much demand for it, I guess.
He's back three years later. Coaching the women's team in the second division, no less.
Welcome to second division women's football.
Well, I've never coached women before.
Are you all decent?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Oh, hi.
Are we definitely clear?
Yeah, you can take that off.
It was you telling me I got your back. Anything.
You must be Coach Chilton. I heard a lot about you.
Most people think she's rudish.
That was pathetic.
I think she's hilarious.
Down. But we all got a little voice in the back of our heads saying, be strong.
Because you believe in me.
I just want to remind us all of something real quick.
Leaning back on you.
There is crying in football.
There is crying, but there's so much laughter in football when it's through the eyes of Ted Lasso and his, motley group of associates. Is this going to be as interesting as – let me start with a sexist question. Is this going to be as interesting as watching him coach men in the Premier League?
I think so, absolutely, because, mm-hmm. I mean, yes, the football is part of the show undeniably, but it's always been about the people and
– But are the stakes as high, you reckon?
Absolutely, because it's always been the underdog story. I mean, at the start of the original series, you know, AFC Richmond were not very good either, and so this – will follow a similar trajectory. I mean, if anything, maybe it is repeating too many beats of the first seasons, but as a longtime Ted Lasso fan and apologist, because I know a lot of people sort of fell off towards the latter half of the third season in particular, I was just so happy to be back in this world, to be back in this tone. I was like, if they want to tell me the same story again with some different jokes, I am here for it.
Yeah, and you know, how much TV out at the moment makes you feel this good.
Yeah, the warm and fuzzies are so strong. That first episode back, I was crying. The second episode, yeah. I don't think I cried. Maybe I did, but almost at least every second episode, I've seen 6 out of 10, just, you know, brought all those like big, open-hearted, warm-hearted, like emotions, which I think so much TV is cynical and bleak. And for this to just be unapologetically warm, I'm like, yes, great.
It gives Wholesome a good name.
Yeah, it does. It gives Wholesome a good
name.
There's
something about the positivity of the psychology of it and the sort of psychological approach of this man, Jason Sudeikis, who plays, that is that feels like, I don't know, a real balm.
Yeah, it is an absolute kind of champion of positivity and belief. And, you know, we are surrounded by negativity. We're surrounded by clickbait headlines and, oh my goodness, this person, you wake up in the morning, you're like, oh, that's happened overnight while I was asleep and this many people are dead and that decision was made. And just to have this one little thing every single week, like, is it as complex as it could be? Probably not. Maybe it's a little too Pollyanna, but for 45 minutes, I think that is okay to have that.
And it's really well acted. People deliver, I mean, for something so sort of wholesome, people do deliver some wryness. They're good with pratfalls too. The physical comedy element to it is wonderful. They've got a new character, an assistant coach, a very grumpy
And I love her and I can't wait for her to just sort of come into the fold.
Who is she? We can't get her name. We're running out
Tanya
of time.
Reynolds.
Tanya Reynolds.
She's from Sex Education. It's probably the one you'll remember
the
most.
Right. There we go. Anyway, look, yeah, go see it. Get out and see it. Oh, don't get out and see it. Stay home on the couch and see it. Ted Lasso Season 4 streams on Apple TV. And that is it for The Couch for another episode. I'm Jason DeRosso.
I'm Wen Lima.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye.